Everybody ready?
Yep.
Let's go!
Ahsoka!
Four Midwest Guys presents... Star Wars Rebels HQ.
Battles leave scores. Some you can't see.
Holocron. I'm afraid it's changing.
I will never let my friends get hurt again.
Your anger gives you strength.
Governor Price, these rebels have proven particularly stubborn. How do you intend to solve this problem?
I need someone who sees a bigger picture.
To defeat an enemy, you must know them, not simply their battle tactics, but their history, philosophy, art.
I must become more powerful.
Split the treasure.
Oh, that's a classic.
One last glorious day in the Grand Army of the Republic.
Jedi and Sith, the light and the dark.
They'll be the architects of their own destruction.
The key destroying the Sith.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Four Midwest Guys Presents Star Wars Rebels HQ. Tonight we'll be reviewing Season 3, Episode 7, Imperial Super Commandos. With me tonight is Mr. Brian Akebauer.
What's up?
What's going on, B? And my brother Aaron.
Hey, man.
How's it going, dude?
I'm doing all right. How you doing now?
Well, I'm hanging in there. We just finished our Doctor Strange podcast, and now we're moving into some Rebels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here we go. So better late than never. We're talking about Season 3, Episode 7, Super Commandos. Episode opens up with a little bit of, I guess what I would call Mando chess, or maybe Mando checkers. It's some sort of cube with,
Little swords. Yeah, something. Tiny, like, little pointy things.
Holographic swords. Yeah. But it kind of sets the tone for the, for the episode, because it's all about strategy.
Star Wars already has this sort of like battle chess, little holographic monster. So this would probably be the equivalent of checkers, right?
That's how I would look at it. Either it kind of look like checkers or some sort of Mando chess, kind of thing.
Well, you only really see like a couple moving pieces, but even if it's like Endgame, you would expect it to be a bit more complex if it was more chess-like.
Yeah, it almost kind of reminded me of like jackals and whatever, that old Egyptian thing.
I don't know if I played it.
Anyway, but yeah, it was. It was just. But the big conversation was Rao basically saying he's only loyal to Mandalore, and Sabine trying to recruit Rao to be part of the
rebellion. Yeah.
So, but that's kind of the big scene. So we're moving on to the briefing room. Lost communication with the Concord Mandos. Rebels think it's a trap. Rao says something must have happened, so they send him out. First use of the Phantom 2. What do you guys think of the Phantom 2?
It still looks kind of shitty.
Yeah.
It's a little painted up, but it doesn't look nearly as good as the previous shit.
True.
It doesn't, right?
No, I don't think it looks as good either.
Like, it really is just like a basic shuttle sort of design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that they cut off the very top of it, because it had like that super peak thing going on, and they at least cut that down.
Just that giant, like, spoiler
sort
of way.
Yeah, like giant, like, fin, like shark fin. It's like shark fin shuttle is what I kind of call it. I don't know.
Apparently, that was not functional. It kept hitting things, so it didn't even cut it off. It just got knocked off at some point.
The other part I liked about that scene was they continue to call him the cranky guest and not a prisoner, even though he's in shackles and in a prison cell.
He clearly is a prisoner. Yeah.
He's clearly a prisoner.
They're just changing the narrative to make it seem like they're nicer.
Yeah, which is kind of strange, because I thought, I'm not sure how much time's passed, but I would say it's been at least a couple months, so he's just been sitting in a prison cell.
Yeah.
Hanging out.
It's a little dishonest.
Yeah.
Just referring to him as a cranky guest.
Cranky guest. I don't know.
You're there, it's really diminishing what it means to be a prisoner, or a prisoner.
And I get it, they hold him, and that gives them safe passage as long as they're holding him, but I don't know, and he agreed to it even. It just seems a little strange to me that the Rebels are going along with it. Maybe it's just out of necessity.
I don't know. Essentially. I mean, at this point, a couple stormtroopers have died, if not, you know, multiple. You know, they're acknowledging that it's a warlike scenario. So, yeah, he's just kind of a prisoner of war.
Prisoner of war. So, on board the Phantom II, Ezra kind of gets overtaken by Rao because he's taken back by the destruction that he sees of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, half the planet's kind of gone, or a big chunk of it's gone.
Yeah, then they start talking about, like, why the Mandalorians fight with each other, and...
So, they really establish here Ezra, at least they start to establish that Ezra's the outsider looking in here, and he completely doesn't understand, you know, like, tribal or clans, like
the kind of gang warfare of it.
Gang warfare, or even, like, the closest thing I could think of, like, when I think of clan warfare, would be, like what we've seen in Scotland with the different, you know, you had the different... Like, yeah, the McAllisters and the...
Oh, kind of like how if you look at the feudal era of Japan. Yeah,
the feudal era of Japan would be another example. Just different families or different groups, different, you know...
Yeah, just small little wars here and there.
Yeah, just, you know, this group over here, but nothing united. Mm. So they're always against each other.
Yeah, well, if you look at a lot of countries, like, even, like, England and Spain, a lot of smaller areas, like, you have a lot of different ruling factions that kind of vie for power.
Gotcha. So, moving on to... so we make it over to the Protector base, and so Rao's just kind of stunned because they've ambushed his clan, essentially, his group of men.
Then he starts blaming the Rebels
right.
for him not being there, not being able to help defend them off. And at this point, he's kind of assuming it's, like, just a different clan on the... on the planet, right?
Well, he's at first, I think they even say the Empire do this, and immediately Rao knows just by the blaster marks that
like the angle of trajectory,
that it's another Mando clan, which kind of goes against what we hear in A New Hope, where when we talk about the Imperial stormtroopers and when they come across the when they slaughter the Jawas, and he goes. Well, Sand people must have done this, and Kenobi goes, only Imperial stormtroopers could have done this. Look at these blast marks. Too precise. I'm like, really? That's how it goes against everything. That line has always thrown me off.
Because pretty much in the rest of the films...
They suck.
They have no precision.
No precision no accuracy. Whatsoever. So...
He's used to the old clone troopers. Apparently, they had precision.
They had precision, yeah. He's getting things mixed up in his head.
He got old. Like, he was hanging out, like, on a planet that didn't deal with stormtroopers. He's used to the clone troopers.
The senile Jedi.
He had his moments where his cognition was fine, and then other things is a little jumbled.
A little bit. We also hear Ezra here. He's kind of clueless. He's questioning, why would this happen? Why would... Mandos attack Mando. Mandalorians attack Mandalorians.
Yeah, it's like a cultural shift sort of thing for him.
Yeah, completely shocked, completely
out of place. And in his defense, Mandalorians in the Star Wars universe do seem to have a very interesting kind of unique culture.
Oh, yeah, I definitely
like, think they so. Stand aside from a lot of others.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely have a following. They're definitely cool. Obviously, the Mandos started from just Boba Fett, right? Mm. And then they created the entire Mando culture around Boba
Fett. Yeah, but they create a lot of backstory for it that, right. You know, kind of sets aside. Like, it's in the same way that you look at, like, the Jabbas as, like, that criminal kind of almost, like, family or race or
right.
whatever you
want. Gangsters.
Yeah. Right. Like, they're very specific to that, you know. Like,
to that genre.
Yeah.
So they created the lore off the one character. But yeah, so it's really cool that we're starting to dive into that whole Mandalorian culture and stuff like that. So, yeah, he does blame the Rebels. He thinks his men would have survived if he was there, and because the Rebels kept Rao away, that's the reason why.
So
he blames the Rebels for that.
He blames them, but at the same time, he still wants to survive and kind of. Continue for revenge, so he actually does kind of move forward to kind of working with Sabine and trying to survive the incident after... Yeah. I'm jumping ahead a bit, aren't I?
No, not really. I mean, it's okay.
Because you, we also have the bit where you actually realize it's the Mandalorian stormtroopers.
Right, that comes later.
Okay.
But I think at this point, though, where he's just... I think it's just survivor guilt, though, is why he's just automatically going rebels. He's just looking for somebody else to blame other than himself.
Partially, but at the same time, he viewed himself as a leader. He viewed that as his responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some sort of... you know, kind of guilt in that regard as well. That might be a little different than just basic survivor's guilt, because that is his responsibility that got abandoned in that regard.
Gotcha. So he let his men down.
Essentially.
Yeah. That makes sense. So they run into Imperial probe droid. To me, this kind of looked like a mini version that we see in Empire Strikes Back, you know, because the first time we see a Imperial probe droid, it looks kind of big. Kind of bigger. This one,
it's kind of hard to gauge the size of it, but
yeah,
it might be a little smaller.
Yeah, I also found it kind of funny that Ezra tried to use the Force to hold it, but he couldn't hold on to it.
Yeah, it seems like this episode, like, Ezra both became a little less intelligent and a little less underpowered.
Yeah, I thought his Force powers were definitely underused.
I mean, like, we've seen him more or less take control of a stormtrooper and, you know, like, pilot an AT-AT walker.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's because he was using the dark side of the Force, and now he's back to using the light side of the Force, and it takes longer to get more powerful, so he's actually weakened
some. Because, like, he got used to it.
Right, like...
So it's like he came off steroids and has to readapt.
Kind of, yeah. You know, he can't use the dark side to cheat anymore, so now he's having to use just the light side. And
or he's now less aligned with the light side, so he's not as strong in that area. Right,
exactly. So he's kind of... He's either stuck in between somewhere, or, again, because the light side, it takes longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dark side is deceptive, you know, quicker.
I know, but it also kind of came across, like, in the scene where, like, Rao gets, like, a one-up on him, like, it seems like it kind of underpowered him, like, just in terms of intelligence as well. Because, like, you go back to, like, the beginning of the season, like, and he was kind of on task of, like, being focused and driven. The leader. And now it's just, like, ADD kicked in. Knocked out.
I think, yeah, it could be partially that, and I think it's just he's like a fish out of water, I think. I think he's in such shock of the Mandalorian culture, where Sabine, obviously being a Mandalorian, understands it completely, and he's dealing with two Mandos, and he's just a fish out of water here.
Yeah.
He's trying to adapt, but it's not working for him. I also liked in this scene where after they destroy the probe droid, you know, Rao threatens to leave and says he's going to use their base as a bargaining chip with the Empire, or the location of their base. So,
well, yeah, I mean, that's
again, if your survivor point.
Yeah, like he's trying to survive. He wants to survive long enough to get revenge on whoever took out his clan.
Right. So he'll do whatever it takes.
Exactly. And I mean, if that gives him, you know, more tools and equipment to get to that area, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And also, he's pretty pissed off at the rebellion and is blaming them for, you know, his clan's death to a certain extent.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of a two for one.
Two for one special. So eventually we see the flying stormtroopers show up. No, not flying stormtroopers. Worse, Mandos that serve the Empire. And he calls them traitors, flat out traitors.
Yeah.
Because he knows about them. He's just... He doesn't agree with it.
Yeah, like, from his point of view, anyone that isn't specifically serving a Mandalore clan specifically is kind of a traitor.
Right, so even
because even when he's talking to Sabine, he views her in a very similar way early on in the episode.
Oh, yeah, because she's from a rival clan, and so therefore he automatically doesn't like her from the get-go. She's already got that going against her with him, right? And but, yeah, it's interesting because... the Concord Dawn, his protectors, were being paid by the Empire to serve the Empire. And that was okay. But if you directly serve the Empire, it was a different story.
Yeah, like, his point of view is like, you can be a mercenary, we fight people, that's what we do.
Yeah.
But when you're serving them, then you're just their dog, sort of thing.
Interesting. So, they have a kind of a strange, I would say the look of these Mando stormtroopers, because that's what I'm going to call them, Mando troopers, I guess. They have a strange combination of Mando gear and stormtroopers. It's kind of...
Yeah, it's an interesting take, and like some of the like color patterns on it actually kind of remind me of some of the stormtroopers from Clone Wars.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like there are some similarities, like on how it's, especially with the one leader whose name I can't remember,
Gar Saxon, which we'll get to.
Yeah, Saxon. Like you look at how his armor is painted; it's similar to some of the ones we've seen in Clone Wars.
Like the biggest difference I noticed was the backpack, the jetpack backpack.
Then there's a bit of a difference with the helmet as well. That's a bit more Mandalorian.
A little bit more Mandalorian, a little bit kind of stormtrooperish. But the backpack, they've got rid of the missile off the backpack.
Like it's just the backpack.
It's literally or it's just the jetpack. There's no So they slimmed all that down. That's gone. So and that to me is kind of the big thing, right? That's one of the big things that made Boba Fett cool to play with as a kid. Because you can make the argument
Boba Fett didn't really have a whole lot of lines or action scenes. So that was it essentially.
Yeah, you remember like Brian? You remember playing with the Mando?
Oh yeah,
yeah. And the jetpack with the missile.
It was funny because we would argue with who get to play Boba Fett.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because he was a cool.
I mean, we had Vader and we had stormtroopers and everything and.
Yeah.
You argue who gets to play Boba Fett.
So an interesting take on the Empire version of the Mando. Much less cool version.
Yeah, it's much more uniform. It's far less interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's actually arguably very bland comparative to, like, Boba Fett's armor or even Sabine's armor.
Yeah. What did you think, Brian? Did you like the new outfits or not so much?
I didn't care for them either one way or the other. I mean, I just... The episode didn't really stand out a whole bunch, but I was hoping it would, but it didn't really stand out a whole bunch.
Yeah, but just on the outfit of the new Mandos,
yeah, I mean,
didn't really care for it. Kind of blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, did you actually notice the little owl thing on Sabine's shoulder?
Rehearsed? Yes, that's been there all season.
Has it? Yeah. I don't remember that. Yeah. Like, we might have talked about it.
We did, actually. Skip my mind.
Yeah. We did?
Yeah, we talked about it. She's painted the what we like to call the Force owl, I guess, on her.
Yeah, like there's a couple scenes where it like really shows up really well in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the first time I've seen it.
Really? I could have sworn we talked about it.
We talked about the owls.
Yeah.
We've talked about the owls being there, but I don't remember ever seeing it on her outfit.
Really? I thought I pointed that out. Maybe I didn't.
I thought we did, but I could be wrong. Like, yeah. It's really noticeable in quite a few scenes in this one. Like, you can get, like, the detail a lot better than
I think it's because it's, like, a darker, like, night environment. And, you know, it's white. Kind of shows up. But yeah. Yeah. So that's... I'd still like a little bit of a story told why she did that because it's very interesting to me that she
because it's such an omen thing in how we see it in the series versus like right. It's there.
Why would a person inside the series do that?
Yeah,
you know, inside the story. So Ezra leads him away to let Rao and Sabine get away. I know Rao still has his lightsaber, but again, do you guys feel Ezra just kind of. I don't know, it seems like his powers are really diminished.
Well, not just that, but, like, he seems less intelligent in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool that he sacrificed himself, but it was just like, why not use the Force to get your lightsaber from Rao in the first place, and then use it against the Mandos right off the get-go? Instead, he's playing almost coy, like he's trying to hide that he's a Jedi on purpose. Yeah. And it kind of is, once he gets captured.
Once he's captured, yeah.
But I wonder if that's his plan all along. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I don't really see the benefit to that. And it never really... Throughout the episode, it doesn't really suggest that it was intentional.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those things, like, there's a weird thing in this episode where he just seems really underpowered. And, like, that whole tactical thing that he was having in previous episodes just doesn't really seem there to the same extent.
Do you think maybe it's because he's going up against Mandalorians, and so because it's Ezra versus Mandalorians instead of Ezra versus Stormtroopers?
That might be a part of it. It could also be part of just kind of maybe taking a back seat, or they just didn't want to utilize the character that way.
Yeah, I think it's probably more for plot, but I'm just trying to get inside the head of.
Like, how it works, like, within the story sort of thing?
Yeah, in the story and why the writers are doing this, other than for plot purposes.
You know? I imagine they're setting up Sabine in, this for kind of a Mandalorian arc this season. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Or at the very least, it seems like a beginning of one.
Definitely. So, Rao kind of teaches Sabine a little strategy. He convinces Sabine not to let Ezra's sacrifice be in vain. And then he also tells her the fact that he has his lightsaber... may actually keep him alive, because it'll keep Saxon from knowing he's a Jedi for a little while anyway.
It might give him some time to kind of negotiate his position, or like at least stay hidden.
Right.
And you do see Ezra try to take advantage of that fact by pretty much lying multiple times, trying to, you know, disguise why he's there.
Yeah, and he's using that whole, again, playing coy kind of thing. So I wonder if... It almost makes me wonder if Kanan's trying to get him to do that, you know, because Kanan
does rely on his force powers less.
Not only that, but to hide that he's a Jedi from people, because Kanan was really good at that. He even had his lightsaber come apart,
like dismantled in
two pieces, so nobody would know. Mm. You know, so I'm just wondering. Yeah, again, just trying to figure it out, because to me it doesn't make much sense.
I don't know. Like, if you're making the argument that he's trying to rely more on his wits rather than on, like, force abilities, you can maybe make an argument for it, but it'll be interesting to see how, whether it actually even addresses it in show or not. Mm.
So, Ezra asked him who the guy in the red with the leader of the flying stormtroopers is. He introduces himself as Gar Saxon. He's the Imperial Viceroy of Mandalore, meaning that he's the Imperial appointed leader of the homeworld of Mandalore. And if you have heard the name Gar Saxon before, if you are a Clone Wars fan and a Son of Dathomir comic book fan, Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir, then you definitely have heard the name before. Because Gar Saxon, back, if you go back to Season 5 again, in that whole Darth Maul arc, there was a Mando that had the red Mandos, and there was one that had the spikes on his helmet to mimic Darth Maul, and his face shield was often yellow, so he actually appears in the Clone Wars, and he's actually kind of Darth Maul's right-hand man through, not only in that arc episode, but also in the Darth Maul Son of Dathomir comic book. So he almost acts like his number two.
Oh, okay.
So in the fact that they've now put Darth Maul back into Rebels,
like, you wonder if that's going to collide at some point.
Precisely. I think I'm starting to kind of tie everything together. And,
well, yeah, because even in this season, Darth Maul mentioned that he used to rule the Mandalorians.
Right, so there's another hint, right? Because he brought that up earlier, just reminding the fans
of it. Yeah, just in case you didn't see Clone Wars, here's this little specific bit of information.
Right, so... And there, this Gar Saxon also worked with a female Mando who was also in... She never took off her helmet, this one. But she was in that, also in that same room with the, I guess you would call it the throne room of Mandalore. And her name is Rook Cast. Now, a lot of people believe that Rook Cast is... looks a lot like Sabine and is actually Sabine's mother. Because Dave Filoni has revealed that her mother was in that throne room. There are two female Mandalorians in that throne room. Rook Cast being one, and the other being Bo-Katan, which I used to think that my running theory was is that Bo-Katan is Sabine's mother. But this kind of throws the fact that they brought this Gar Saxon character in, and that he worked with Rook Cast, and then we find out later that when Gar confronts Sabine and he says, you know, your mother has been looking for you, she works with me now, by the way, FYI, that there's at least a very now strong possibility.
There's a correlation between the two characters previously.
That it's no longer... my theory is beginning to maybe not hold up as well. It still could be Bo-Katan, but it sounds like it's going to be this Rook Cast character.
Yeah,
that we only see in this comic book, which I really need to get a hold of the whole series and read through now, because I think it's going to be heavily mentioned and referenced in Rebels going forward.
Yeah,
so I'm just trying to, you know, the way it's all kind of coming together. Could be. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. But the interesting connection about Bo-Katan is Bo-Katan was the sister of the Duchess of Mandalore, who used to rule Mandalore back in the Clone Wars. I don't know if you ever saw any of those episodes. Yeah. And that was her sister. So I've always liked the Bo-Katan theory better because it would make Sabine Mandalore royalty rather than just a regular Mandalore, Mando, so to speak. And also, this Duchess Satine was also Obi-Wan Kenobi's love interest. And I really heavily believe, especially after the second episode of the season, that we're going to see Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's a very good possibility.
So I
think also, I mean, the show has been good about kind of fluidly introducing like some of the older characters and kind of tying the prequels into like the original film. So
yeah,
and Obi-Wan is a character we really haven't seen get kind of tied in through this yet. So right. It's a good possibility.
And I just like that theory better. And that would just be another reason for Obi-Wan to leave Tatooine to get involved temporarily with the Rebels in Star Wars Rebels for maybe an episode or two.
Yeah.
If he finds out that Sabine is in trouble and Sabine just happens to be Duchess Satine's nephew. Or that, you know, Bo-Katan's in trouble. That's her sister's in trouble. That's something he would probably do, in my opinion. But we'll see. I don't know.
He gives a personal incentive, if nothing else.
Precisely. So, you know, I've been doing a lot of my homework here, obviously, and trying to research. Now, there's another theory, after I looked at another picture of Bo-Katan, that I'm going to throw out there, a new theory I have.
You just really want to use Bo-Katan in a theory.
I did. And that would be that Rao may be related to Bo-Katan. Because Rao has the same hair color, seems to have the same facial features somewhat. Looks like Bo-Katan. So I will throw that theory out there as
well. Yeah, it's a good possibility. I mean, Mandalorians are essentially like just an ancient generation that probably kind of they exist in the same system. So
right.
It's a closed community. There's only so many mating options.
Well, there's a lot of Mandos, but still I think it would be an interesting dynamic as well to have, you know, a Bo-Katan.
Well, that's also very dependent on how the clan system works there. Like, do you marry within clan, or can you marry across clans? Or
that's yet to be
because I mean, know, like, if you look at like ancient European royalty, where they didn't really go outside clans,
married cousins.
Yeah, clan. Like there was a lot of that sort of thing. So if you have a similar system here,
then
there's probably a lot of close connections.
Okay, so it's hard to say. But I just want to throw out, I kind of stopped doing the episode just to throw out those theories, because I did some digging, and my digging led to more and more and more.
Yeah. Well, like we said, like, Mandalorians are a culture that had been built upon pretty well within the Star Wars universe, because, you know, Boba Fett was a fan favorite, and it is an interesting culture to throw out there. Like, I think there's even been, like, some of the extended universe novels that focused on them, like, pretty exclusively, right?
Yeah, there was some, although technically, Boba Fett is not a Mando. He just happens to have Mando gear. But, nevertheless. Okay, so back to Ezra's interrogation. Gar Saxton keeps wanting to know if there's anybody else. I liked how Ezra used more of his allies of the past, or people he knew in the past as a cover. At first, he said, well, I'm part of Hondo Inaka's crew, and he'll vouch for me.
Interesting because Saxton has this kind of lines like, you think you're lying to me, but every lie you tell tells me more about you.
Right.
Which is actually kind of an interesting, a more intelligent line than I would have expected for how they had the character set up.
You thought he wouldn't be more stupid? Maybe not.
They kind of present him a bit more like kind of grunt, brutish, and seems like there is an intelligence behind that as well.
Yeah.
And I thought that was actually kind of interesting. Don't get me wrong, it does seem like they also gave him like kind of anger issues and kind of a short temper, but there is at least a moderate amount of intelligence behind that.
Well, you can tell he's probably, because he was Darth Maul's number two, that maybe he's learned a few things along the way. But it was funny, though, to me, because at first he's like, oh, I'm part of Hondo's crew. And then he starts threatening,
Chopper,
and Okay, I'm Lando Calrissian.
Yeah, he's told people he's Lando Calrissian on multiple occasions in this show.
Well, I think this is the first time he's used Lando, and it's the first time he's used Hondo. He's always been Jabba, or Jabba the Hutt, or, you know.
Oh, really? Nowadays.
I don't think he's ever...
I think he's used Lando at least once before, but I could be wrong.
Have. I'd have to go back and look. It's possible.
Yeah.
I could have missed it. But, so... Sabine learns from Rao, though, that Saxon is indeed from her clan, Clan Vizsla. And that's, you know, he said, well, he should look recognized to you, you traitor. He's part of your clan, blah, blah, blah. So, again, more little, you know, fighting amongst clan between Saxon and Sabine. However, Rao learns that, you know, because Saxon reveals to Ezra that he was going to kill him anyway. You know, he was just looking for... He was just going to do it regardless of whether Rao
like
was...
He wanted...
Helping the rebels or not.
Yeah, he's wanted to do it for a while now, so...
Right.
It was, you know, an excuse to.
So he, you know, he kind of calls... He calls for a truce. He goes, well, you know, I would have been killed anyway, so... Truce for now. Kind of interesting, though, later on when... And I'm going to jump ahead for a second because I kind of want to talk about it. He calls truce, but yet when they go to get to the shuttle later, he just takes off.
Yeah.
Again, maybe that's his survival in him. I don't know.
What kind of just, like, it's truce until we're sort of, you know, we can change it to for our own benefit kind of thing.
Until I see fit. Okay. Maybe that's what it is. I just was kind of like.
Like, don't get me wrong, like, the Mandalorians seem to be very protective within clan, but outside of it, it's kind of a free for all.
You're screwed. Yeah, that could be. also liked in this particular scene when she springs Ezra from there, she gets a jetpack, and that seems to be a big deal to her. She's like, I've always wanted one of these. Like, she never quite graduated into full Mando, maybe. I don't know.
Well, they put her into the, like...
Imperial Academy.
Academy, so it's probably one of those things... No, she probably never did.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a, I don't know, like a big deal or...
Yeah, it's like a teenager passing. Getting their first car.
Yeah.
Don't worry, like, she flies ships all across the universe, but that's not her culture's equivalent.
Right, that was kind of her big deal. So Ezra, before all this, actually before she springs, Ezra gives away that he's a Jedi because he's finally using his powers.
To prevent Jabba from getting shot.
Yeah, and then Saxon's like, well, you just became much more valuable to me there, pal. You know? Yeah. So, so again, you know, Ezra trying to hide his Jedi powers. I don't know. It just seems...
Yeah, this whole episode's kind of weird from, like, Ezra's story arc as well, because it kind of seems like they're almost downpowering him just to let him take a backseat, almost.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I don't know if, like I said, dark side power back to light side power, or if he's just trying to be... If Kanan's just wanting him to be more coy with his powers and use them as much.
He's just taking the episode off.
Kanan did, yeah. Pretty much, he had one line. Good point, Brian.
Very similar to me.
Yes, kind of like you, kind of dozing in and off the podcast, my friend. Oh my God. I know it's a late night, I apologize.
Well, that's not your fault.
Okay, so moving on to the Mando chase scene. Ezra,
I think this is probably the highlight for the episode, don't you?
I think so.
It was pretty damn cool, for starters. You know, Ezra Chopper Freed, what took so long? Well, it was using strategy. It takes longer, Ezra.
It's a great line.
It's kind of a cool line, kind of putting him in his place, I thought. Again, Rao abandons him after he calls truce. Just kind of strange to me. I don't know. I just thought he'd have a little bit more honor than that.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe not.
Well, in his defense, it's also the group that's been holding him prisoner for like the last 2 months.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's a good point. So like, he's going to take his opportunity to free himself.
Yeah, like...
I didn't think about that.
In his defense, like, if either side wins, he's still with someone that's going to either kill him or keep him captive.
Yeah.
Well, or possibly, anyway.
Yeah, it's just funny. I don't know. But I didn't think about that, though. I guess I would take my first chance to get the hell away from him, too. So Saxon confronts Sabine... Yeah, this is where he says, I know your mother's looking for you. Your mother, you were dishonored. You know, she stands with the Empire now. You dishonored your family.
Yeah, but, he pretty much says, like, well, she had to join the Empire after you disgraced your family.
Right. So, again, that tells me it could be Bo-Katan. Because maybe Bo-Katan, for, you know, is was forced to join the Empire, where I would think Rook Cass character, who's already worked with him in the past, would want to stay.
Oh yeah, but I mean, it's not necessarily a character where the personality's like developed too heavily. Outside, maybe in the comics it is, but
right.
So I mean, there could be a personality difference that would justify like kind of a split, even.
Yeah.
Either way.
It could go either way.
Yeah, essentially.
So my Bo-Katan theory is still alive, although maybe not so much. We'll see. So, but out of respect for her mother, Rao gives her the chance to swear her allegiance. But another nice use of strategy, though, by Sabine uses the interference on their channel.
Oh, with Chopper.
Chopper.
Yeah. That was an interesting sword technique.
You know, she gets down when I swear that you're a fool, and, you know, uses strategy. But a good, you know, good
show. Yeah, it's kind of a good, kind of like false flag maneuver sort of thing.
Yeah, and it shows she's not stupid. She does a pretty good job on her own. Again, with the awesome chase scene through the canyon. I don't know, Brian, what did you think about this chase scene? This thing was pretty damn cool.
It was by far my favorite part of the whole episode.
Yeah, I mean, you got Mando jetpacks, lightsabers, Jedi. I mean, what more do you want in the coolness factor of the Star Wars universe?
Things I find funny about it, like you have like Sabine holding on to Ezra for like the first bit of this chase, and you're just like, and he's just kind of dangling there, not really like he doesn't have a gun where he's shooting back. He's not like trying to defend. He's just like, well, this is a fun trip, I guess.
Well, it's just he's kind of struggling, and she's like, a little help.
Yeah. And then later on, he falls onto Chopper, and you're like, wait, Chopper's actually thrust is powerful enough you could have just sat on Chopper.
The whole time.
Yeah. Well, overall, like, the whole, you're more or less riding him like a skateboard thing's amusing, but like.
Well, they could also be trying to set up the romance thing between him and Sabine, you know, her kind of grabbing.
You're still hoping for that, aren't you?
I kind of am. I'm kind of rooting for it a little bit, I guess. I kind of like the idea of a Jedi Mando coming down the line somewhere. That's the coolest thing ever. That's what you used to do.
Is that not in the extended universe at some point?
Not that I remember. I'm sure it is somewhere. But I mean, that when you have the figures,
I mean,
when you're playing with the Boba Fett, the one thing you want
to they already Boba gave Fett the Mandalorians like that one black sword.
Yeah, like, they do
that. That was pretty cool.
The Darksaber.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you were a kid, that's the one thing you always wanted to give Boba Fett was a lightsaber. It was the only thing he was missing.
So what you're saying is you want Sabine to have, like, that black saber at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we've seen, spoiler alert, but we've seen photos and trailers. She does have it, so.
So, like, it's just coming so close.
Yeah, it's so close, and it's like, oh, so if they mate and they have a kid, then he would be a Mando Jedi, or she would be a Mando Jedi. Either way, it'd be freaking cool.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I'm kind of rooting for it, I guess. I don't know. But I did also like how Ezra did use Chopper kind of as a surfboard. Towards the end, he's sitting there riding, kind of Chopper.
Yeah, it is kind of surfish.
Kind of a surfboard kind of thing.
It actually seems more practical, because that at least allows Sabine to use both her pistols, as well as him actually being able to kind of defend himself a bit better.
Yeah, which, more practical.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll use the Chopper surfboard again at some point, I don't know. Rao has a change of heart, comes back to the rescue. Was kind of nice to see they at least added some decent firepower to the Phantom II, those two laser cannons.
Yeah, it has a couple guns, so.
Able to cause some serious damage anyway.
Well, I'm not sure if I'd say serious damage. It's enough to blow the one ship
up. One ship up with only a couple shots. I mean, granted, it didn't have its shields up, but still, I mean, that's pretty good.
Well, I imagine that plays a big role in that sort of thing, though, doesn't it?
What's that, not having a shield? Sure. Yeah. Sure, but still, it only shot, again, he could just be a really good shot, maybe, but. So it's not.
Well, it was a still target in his defense.
Yeah, so
in its defense.
At least they gave it something.
Yeah.
Try to make it cool. Not really, but they tried. but, you know, obviously Rao says these kids are under my protection. He calls them kids. Kind of interesting. Obviously, there's a big fight between Sabine and Saxon. And she actually kicks Saxon's butt.
Yeah.
So it just makes me wonder if that's why if Saxon uses more of his intellect and is probably manipulative because he's maybe not the greatest Mando fighter.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it also hints that that's probably why he joined the Empire as well, because he probably couldn't rise to the top of his clan on his own.
Right, exactly. let's see. Oh, and then obviously during the fight, she's like, "They shot my jetpack." She got pissed. She's like, "No, not my jetpack." She didn't really care that she nearly died. They shot my jetpack.
Yeah, she's like, "I just got it.
I just got this cool car, and now I dented it, wrecked it. Damn it." So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then obviously Rao tells her, "Well, you're willing to die for your people, even though they're not Mando. You haven't forgotten our ways. You've earned my respect." So kind of a warrior code, maybe.
Possibly, yeah.
Some sort of motto, warrior code, you know.
Yeah.
Stand up for your people, you know, live and die for your clan, your family.
They built up a culture. I'm sure there's a lot of rules surrounding that, you know. Maybe not necessarily like a code of chivalry, but something close.
Yeah. And I like the little last jab by Ezra kind of coming through the experience saying, you know, no offense, guys, but you guys are nuts.
Yeah.
You know. I just thought it was kind of a nice acknowledgement of Ezra saying that he's... Mr. Eggmeyer? Yep, you okay?
I ain't trying.
We're almost done, dude. We're coming to the end.
I'm trying, man.
You trying? All right. but yeah, I thought it was a good thing for Ezra just to kind of acknowledge that, yeah, you guys are just nuts. You're crazy. I've come to that conclusion. I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah, he's from a culture where you don't necessarily have to fight every day of your life, so.
Right.
So. Except for the whole Empire thing.
So, in the end, Rao decides to join the Rebels. Yay! And they accept him, I guess. So, now they finally have a Mandalorian on their side.
Two of them.
Yes, they have two now. They have Sabine and Rao, so pretty cool stuff. All right, so we've definitely broke this episode down. We've thrown some theories at you. And now it is time for final thoughts and grades. All right, Mr. Eckenbauer, before we fall asleep, I'll let you have the first final thought and grade.
I'm going to give it a B.
B?
Okay. The fact that it had the Mandalorians in it is the only reason why I gave it that. It was a pretty bland episode other than, you know, the one little scene where they have through the canyon.
Yeah.
So I'll give it a B.
Okay. Aaron?
I'd probably give it like a B minus as well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, the one action scene is pretty interesting. It's weird how, like, Ezra's kind of depowered throughout the episode. Mm-hmm. You do have, like, the one scene that's kind of interesting, but besides that, it is kind of a slower-paced episode. Don't get me wrong, it does seem like it's setting up for, like, a story arc, so that might be why you have to kind of prep everything and get it kind of set for going forward, but it kind of slows the pace of the whole show down, I think.
Yeah, okay. We'll actually give it a B+. It fed my mind, it fed my theories, it made me do research and deepen my theories of who's what and what's to who, and I love that kind of stuff. So from that, and obviously the awesome action scene with the whole Mandos and Jedi and flying, and that whole action scene was more than enough to satisfy my need of this episode, and it served its purpose in the end because they finally got Rao to join them as well, which is only going to help the Rebels going forward. So, all right. So, where can you find 4 Midwest Guys? You can go to google.com, put in the number 4 Midwest Guys. That'll find our Facebook page, our Twitter page, our iTunes account, our YouTube page. We're also on Stitcher and OneCast and just about every other online podcast app. If we're not, let me know. Make sure we're at it. However, if you did like this podcast, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to our iTunes, like us on Facebook, and like us as well as to Twitter. We want to get more followers. If you do those things every time we release a new episode, that way you at least get a notification from us that we have released a new episode, and you'll be the first to hopefully get out there and hear it, see some fresh new podcasts. Speaking of podcasts, we got a lot coming down the road. I'm in the middle of on a Star Wars related note. We've got a 4-part Rogue One miniseries coming up. Obviously, Rogue One being released this December. Also, I just finished Luke Cage. I think I mentioned this last podcast, but after the first year, we'll release a whole Netflix thing. We're planning on a Stranger Things as well review podcast. I just have to get through and knuckle down and finish watching that. So yeah, it's there's a lot of stuff coming on. We also have the Marvel DC Kings, which is our other weekly podcast. So it's a lot of content out there. We're not just Star Wars. We're not just comic book movies. We do a lot of other stuff too. We just got done doing our Doctor Strange review, though, as far as comic books. We did a whole Doctor Strange Revelations, instead of Reactions, Revelations podcast, which we'll release here shortly as well. So definitely get out there and like us and get in touch with us and leave us some comments. You know, we're always wanting comments. We're always wanting feedback. And we'll make sure we mention you on the air if you do. All right, so Mr. Ankenbauer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, no problem. And get you a pillow
next. Kind of phoned this one in.
Yeah, kind of phoned it in. It's okay. We'll get you a pillow next time. And Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
This is B. Willie saying, may the force be with you always.